All right. It's a bit funny because I have to get used to this earphone. Like 2 weeks before I came to Jamyang last year, you know, I bought a kind of smartphone. And before that, I only had this kind of yak phone, or they called, you know, the yak or stone phone, if you, Nokia, you know. You throw it on the floor, it goes in three parts, you put it together, and it still works. Yeah. So now it's all technology, but yeah, anyway. Yeah, so before we start, we try to generate the correct motivation, yeah? So either a universal motivation if you're not Buddhist, and for those thinking to change the mind, to eliminate destructive emotions and achieve happiness and try to help others to achieve the same, yeah? So that's kind of universal motivation. For those who are Buddhist, then you can think in the lines, as you already know, of striving for a precious human rebirth, and for what purpose? In order to achieve liberation and enlightenment, and in particular, thinking about the ultimate state of enlightenment of a Buddha, in order to liberate all modern sentient beings, equal as space, who are suffering and are waiting for you to be liberated. So try to motivate yourself in those lines. And then in front of yourself is Sakyamuni Buddha, and surrounding yourself all the sentient beings of the six realms, undergoing individual sufferings, and then focusing upon their sufferings, and think you have to liberate them, and for that purpose you're going to attend this session, and for that purpose you're going to lead them in a prayer. And then we can start with the prayers on the same as we did yesterday, the prayer book on page number 5. To the Guru, the teacher, the Bhagavan, the Tathagata, the Arhat, the perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and in good conduct, Sagata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and human beings, to the Buddha, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror Sakyamuni, I prostrate make offerings, go for refuge. The Guru, the teacher, the Bhagavan, the Tathagata, the Arhat, perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sagata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror Sakyamuni, I prostrate, make offerings, go for refuge. The Guru, the teacher, the Bhagavan, the Tathagata, the Arhat, the perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sagata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the Buddha, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror Sakyamuni, I prostrate, make offerings, go for refuge. When, O supreme amongst humans, you were born on this earth, you played out the 7 strides, and then said, I am supreme in this world. To you, O wise, I prostrate. With pure bodies, form supremely pure, wisdom ocean like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, winner of the best, savior, to you I prostrate. With supreme signs, face like a spotless moon, color like gold, to you prostrate. Thus free like you, the 3 worlds are not, incomparable wise one, to you prostrate. The savior having great compassion, the teacher having all understanding, the field of merit that causes like a vast ocean, to you the one gone to dust and I prostrate. The purity that frees from attachment, the virtue that frees from the lower realms, the one part sublime pure reality, the Dharma that pacifies, I prostrate. To those who are liberated and show the path to liberation, the holy field qualified realizations, who are devoted to the moral precepts, to you, the sublime community intending virtue, I prostrate. Do not commit any unwholesome actions, engage in perfect wholesome actions, subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. A star, a defective view, a butter lamp, flame, an illusion, a dew drop, and a water bubble, a dream, lightning, clouds, sea conditions as such. Through these merits, male sentient beings attain the rank of all seeing, subdue the full faults, and be delivered from samsara ocean, the birth by the waves, aging, sickness, and death. Then, next Heart Sutra, next page. I prostrate to the 3 noble, rare, sublime ones. Thus I heard at one time the Bhagavan was dwelling on the mass of virtuous mountain in Rajgir, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound affection. Also at that time, the bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara looked upon the very practice of the profound affection of wisdom and beheld those 5 aggregates also as empty of inanimate nature. Then, through the power of the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said to the bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara, How should any son of the lineage who trained who wishes to practice activities of profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara said this to Nivarma Shariputra. Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice activities of profound perfection of wisdom should look upon this like this, correctly and repeating, beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form, and form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, consciousness, factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristics, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deceit, and not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no composition of factors, and no consciousness. No eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visible form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. There is no element, and also including no mind element and mental conscious element. There is no ignorance, no extension of ignorance, and so on, and up to including no aging and death, and no extension of aging and death. Similar, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and part. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, the bodhisattvas rely and dwell in perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifest complete awakened, unsurprised, perfectly complete light in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurprised mantra, the mantra equal to non-equaled, the mantra to really pacifies all suffering should be known as the truth since it is not false. The mantra of perfection of wisdom is declared Tayata, Gata Gata, Paragata, Parasamgata, Di Soha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas should train in profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that. It is like that one should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you indicated, and even Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the Venerable Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara, and those surrounding in there entirely, along with the words of gods, humans, asuras, and the Gandharvas, are overjoyed and highly praised by spoken by the Bhagavan. From the holy supreme realm of Kachera, you who possess the power of clairvoyance and magical emanations, look after practitioners like without distraction, you would like child, to the dakinis of the three abodes and prostrate. Akasamara sasana samarembe. By the teachings of the noble three rare sublime ones, possessing the power of truth, may hindrances be averted, may be dispelled, eliminated, may be pacified. May all negative enemies, negative forces opposed to the Dharma, and may the host of 80,000 obstacles be pacified. May we be freed from harmful conditions to the Dharma. May the excellence be in accordance with the Dharma, and may be auspiciousness and perfect happiness here and right now. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and perfect Guru. Correctly devoting to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once is difficult to find again and is greatly meaningful. Please bless me to generate a mind that unceasingly day and night takes its essence. This life is impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like the shadow follows the body, the wisdom black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsara pleasures is the door to all suffering. They are uncertain, cannot be relied upon. Recognize these shortcomings, please bless me to generate a strong wish for the bliss of liberation. That by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the Parashamoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all modern migratory beings. Please bless me to see this and train in supreme bodhicitta and bear the responsibility of freeing transmigratory beings. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I do not practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the Bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I have pacified distraction to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified part of calm abiding and special insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general part, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the Supreme Vajra Vehicle. At a time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows in Samaya. As I've become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the Gurus who show the noble paths and spiritual friends who practice ever long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. In all my lives, never separate from perfect Gurus, may enjoy the magnificent Dharma. By completing the qualities of stages and paths, may I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. And short mandala on page 22. Sāji bhagi jūnji medu drāri rāli nīdhya jembali Chanchu bada dani gyazu ji Dagi ju shi gibi tsunami Rula penje sangye rupa shu sangye Chidam suni tsunami Chanchu bada dani gyazu ji Dagi ju shi gibi tsunami Rula penje sangye rupa shu sangye Chidam suni tsunami Chanchu bada dani gyazu ji dagi shishi gibi tsunami Tola penje sangye rupa shu So as we just read one of the verses relating with the praise to Sakyamuni Buddha, there we read that do not commit any unwholesome actions. Engage in perfect wholesome actions. Subdue your mind thoroughly. This is a teaching of the Buddha. Yeah. So that means that, as we discussed over the last few days, the 12 links of interdependence, right? So then we also learned different types of karma, and in particular the karma of throwing karma, yeah, or the karma that can throw us either in a good rebirth or in a bad migration. Yeah? So depending on positive or negative karma, and depending on the heaviness of the karma, it has this propelling potential. Yeah? So the heaviness, that means that certain factors should be complete. Briefly, in relation with one of the so I just repeat actually those factors, because it's important to know. Yeah, so if those factors are complete for negative karma, then it becomes powerful. Yeah, if those factors also complete for positive karma, then that's how we practice. We should make them complete as possible for positive karma and prevent them from becoming complete for negative karma, right? So what are those factors? Yeah, so that means most of you probably already know is first is the basis. There's an object, right? A basis or an object. Yeah. I will explain first the outline, right? So the second one is intention. Yeah. So intention basically is subdivided into three. Yeah. So that means the second one, intention, we divide into three things, and that means kind of a motivation, right? We motivate ourselves for something. Yeah. Then there is an a kind of discriminating factor. Yeah, knowing, you know, one like John is John and John is not Peter or something. You know, so discriminating factor. Second one. Third one is kind of an affliction, right? Yeah, so there's three, right? For intention, there's three. Yeah? So motivation, discriminating factor, and how did I translate it? And affliction. Yeah, so there's three. There's the second category, right? The category of intention. Yeah, if you make outline here first, the basis, then intention, subdivide into these three, right? Of motivation, discriminating factor, and affliction. Yeah. Then number three in the outline of four is the deed, the action, physically or verbally, right? Or mentally. Yeah. And then the fourth one is the conclusion or final step, so to say, right? So to take an example as we took before, so my friend in prison, he killed another human being, right? So the basis there is a human being, right? Yeah, so the basis of the object is a human being. So the second intention is subdivided into three, as we saw, right? It was divided into motivation, discrimination, and affliction. So this particular friend of mine in prison, there was not a person, the basis, yeah? So not a human being. Then, in the intention, he had a motivation of wish to kill, right? Then the discriminating factor, he knew the person he was planning to kill was the person he was planning to kill. Yeah. And the third one is kind of an affliction, out of anger, right? Yeah, you can also kill out of ignorance or out of attachment or, you know, but in this case was affliction, anger. Yeah. So then the third in the outline of four, the deed or the action, is the act of killing, either with a gun or with a knife. I don't know how he did it, but he didn't tell me, but you know, it can be done in different ways. Yeah, so that's the method. Then the fourth one is the kind of completion. Yeah, so that means that the person who is killed dies before you to make the karma complete. Right. So that means if you have all those four factors present, yeah, there's a basis with a human being. Yeah, then the second has to be examined very well, because if the first, the wish to kill, is present, but the second, discriminating factor, is not present, you're planning to kill John, but then it's a bit dark and you kill Peter instead, right? So it's not the killing of John, right? So that means the discriminating factor is mistaken. It's still the act of killing, it's still negative, right? But it's not as negative as the discriminating factor was complete, you know? So then the affliction, as we already discussed, out of anger or attachment, for example, for the flesh of an animal, right, we can kill. Yeah. Ignorance, yeah. Some people kill animal for animal sacrifice, yeah, can also be done, yeah, out of ignorance, yeah, not knowing that something like that is harmful. Yeah. And then the deeds, we say, can be done by different means, and the final step is that a person dies before you, right? So, or animal, whatever you kill. Yeah. So that means that if all those factors are complete, it has the potential of generating what is called this throwing karma, right? The second link within the 12 links, right? If those factors are not complete, or one or two or three are missing in the act of killing, it's still negative, right? So that means that karma doesn't become that heavy to throw you in a lower state of rebirth, for example, right? So then it can become a completion karma, negative karma. So another karma helps you to be born somewhere, and then this karma of the act of killing, you know, causes you to be sick in that lifetime, or, you know, have a short life or something like that. You know? So that means there's a completion karma, or completing the environment around us, because it was not as strong to propel you, right? So to propel you in another rebirth, you need kind of a heavy karma. Yeah. So with the positive karma, it's similar. Yeah, the policeman offering the birthday cake to the family, for example. You know, he knew the family, you know, and he knew if he buys this birthday cake, it will be of great benefit, temporarily, of course, but, you know, it will be some benefit for the happiness of the family and the person who has the birthday, yeah. So That means that there's a basis, birthday cake to be given, right? And then there's the motivation to help, yeah, wish to help, maybe based on compassion or a form of love and kindness, or just simply like to help out, right? And then, affliction there is probably not out of attachment or not out of anger, but it can be still, ignorance can still be present, right? Because ignorance, as we saw, even with positive karma, is always dormant, if not manifest, right? Ignorance is always with us. Everything we see, everything we do, is always, we see ourselves as existing from its own side. The birthday cake, you know, we see as existing from its own side. And the act of giving, we see as existing from its own side. Yeah, so that's why it's always been advised, if you want to do virtue and you want to do it perfect, you think about that the object, in this case the birthday cake, right, the act of giving, right, and the giver are in the nature of dependent origination. They are empty of inherent existence. If you do it in that way, then that virtue becomes much more, has a bigger potential, you know, than just thinking I exist from its own side, the birthday cake exists from its own side, you know. So that's a way how to do practice virtue, right? We can play with motivation to think carefully, you know, make a prayer. By doing this, may all sentient beings always find the things they need, you know. So then it becomes very strong, right? So that means that we can play a lot with, you know, these three aspects, you know, of the intention. Yeah, the motivation we can make either stronger or less strong with negative karma, but much stronger with virtue, right? The more compassion, love and kindness is behind it, or bodhicitta even, then it becomes kind of stronger, right? Then the discriminating factor, of course, we make sure it's, the mind is clear, we don't have a mistake, you know, with the aspect of virtue. And as well as the affliction, yeah, so we can do positive things out of affliction. So ignorance is also an affliction, right? If you study mind and mental factors, there's kind of the vision of the six root afflictions, right? So among the six root afflictions, there's different types of ignorance. Yeah? There's the ignorance which is not a view, which is merely not knowing law of cause and effect, right? Yeah, so that's in the first group. Yeah? And there's also an ignorance which is subdivided into wrong views, basically. Yeah? The last one, the wrong views, is subdivided into another five, right? And then the first one of those five is the view of the transitory collection, as we discussed a little bit yesterday, and then we will discuss a bit more. So that means the more you understand with virtue that you doing something and the act and the object involved are empty of inherent existence. They're in the nature of interdependence. And also make a dedication, you always think in that way. You know, that you making the prayer and the prayer and the aim you pray towards actually all are in the nature of interdependence, in the nature of empty of inherent existence. If you do it in that way, also the prayer has much more potential. Yeah, there's a lot of debate back and forth if anger can destroy positive karma or not, and if you seal it with emptiness, how you can prevent that destruction from happening or not. Yeah, but there's a lot of debate regarding those points. But if you understand interdependence, right? Because everything is in the nature of interdependence, you know. So then it brings great benefit. So that's something to be said about those four factors, you know, to make it complete. Yeah, so because I was reading that, do not commit any unwholesome actions, engage in perfect wholesome actions, subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Yeah, so that verse is very precious, actually. You know, we in the monastic institution, monks or nuns, when they do bi-monthly confession of their mistakes, because nobody's perfect, right? So that you can see also in those kind of institutions, there's kind of a lot of emphasis on purification and accumulation of merit. Yeah. So then also this verse can be actually taken instead of what is called the Sutra for Self-Liberation. Yeah. So this verse actually summarizes that whole sutra. You know, it's very, very interesting. It's been cited in the Vinaya scriptures. So this verse, it says, do not commit any unwholesome actions. So we try to prevent from acting in a negative way, right? And we try to engage in wholesome actions. Yeah. So then we go up, you see? We don't do negative things anymore. We we try to subdue our mind a little bit with antidotes towards the destructive emotions, right? And in that way, you know, we train our mind in a positive direction, you know? And that can happen with a criminal, as we saw with the example of the Holborn prison in Norway, when they train, and then, you know, people come back to society, and, you know, it's only 20% who falls back to old habits, but the remaining part, they develop much better. Yeah, there's more happiness being gained, you know? So that means if you prevent yourself from creating negative deeds, you will go to more happiness, right? Yeah, and that's what we like to acquire, because the Buddha saw that we all want happiness, don't want suffering. You know, so that's, yeah. So the Buddha very simple said, you know, if you want happiness, or sorry, the Buddha said, if you want happiness and don't want suffering, if you really want that, then you should live accordance with the law of cause and effect. You know, it's not that the Buddha made this cause and effect. You know, it's out there. Like, you know, when we talked about the seeds you put in the soil, with heat, fertilization, moisture, it grows, right? Yeah, that's an external form of cause and effect. Karma is a kind of within the continuum of one particular individual. That cause and effect is what we call karma. You know, karma is not something, came up in one of the questions, is not something magical thing out there existing all by itself. So then there's in Tibetan, there's a praying saying where it says Tendel Dik. Tendel means dependent origination, right? The world around us, law of cause and effect. Dik means to organize, right? That doesn't mean we can make fire cold instead of hot and burning, but we can prevent our hand from being burned, right? So we cannot change the nature of reality, but we can live according to that nature of reality. And by living in accordance with nature of reality, you know, there's more happiness. Now with the virus, same thing. In Europe, in the beginning, people say, oh, no need for mask. And you see all the Asian countries, all the people wear masks, and goes, what's the point of wearing a mask? It's not a big deal, right? So then, now they see wearing a mask has benefits, especially when you're with a lot of people. Yeah? So that means that it's not that we can change the virus, but we can play with conditions that prevent us from getting infected, right? So that's the same true for karma. You know? We cannot prevent, you know, that non-virtue produces suffering and virtue produces happiness. That we cannot change. But we can live accordance with that law and make sure we only create virtue and abandon non-virtue. You see? So that's what this verse is all about. You know? And then especially according to the 12 links, you see how it is motivated with ignorance, how there's an act, either positive or negative, with those factors we just discussed, right? That when it's complete or not complete, there's a lot of things we can play with, you know, especially the mental aspects, you know. So if you play with those mental aspects, then we can prevent negative karma from becoming heavy and producing heavy results, and make sure our positive intentions, our positive acts, you know, they become complete. You know, if you see some masters, they understand this so well that they go, you know, Lama Sopa Rinpoche, for example, goes into an hotel somewhere, before going inside, pray. Then switch on the light, then pray. So then just switching on the light becomes a virtuous act, you know, if you think, may I eliminate all sentient beings from their suffering, you know? Or when you do, you know, vacuum your room, or you wash your clothes, your clothing, you know, in the washing machine. You know, all these little things. It's all, it looks very worldly, but if you think clearly, with a vacuum cleaner, you can think, oh, my vacuum the dust, you know, is a kind of worldly kind of activity, but if you think, may I purify all sentient beings, right? Or when you do your washing in the washing machine, just pressing the buttons, you know? In India, now we have a washing machine. Yeah. After I left the house, I was very strict, you know, so with mobile phones and washing machines. Now we have a washing machine in the house in Serra just a year ago, I think. Yeah, so we all wash on that. But so if you do those activities with the intention, then you don't have to live in a cave somewhere up in the mountains, right? You know? So if you live up in the mountains and you think, oh, I'm the meditator, you know, people will think I'm quite something because I stay here for some time. You know, so then there's no dharma, right? There's no, it's the motivation is not correct. If you live in the middle of a city, You can do retreat, you know. Yeah, very comfortable. You can do retreat, no problem. It's just you have to make boundaries, right? And then, based on those boundaries, also try to every act you have to do on a daily basis, try to motivate it in this way, and then becomes the outcome will become amazing, you know, just by washing something. Normally we just wash. So if you have to wash anyway, then you might as well put it into practice, you know, or vacuum your room, whatsoever. Yeah, there's many things you can use it in that way. So then we engage in wholesome actions, right? You see? So it's kind of a skill. The more wholesome actions you have, yeah. But one of the questions actually I saw just before coming here, in relation with purification. Yeah, that's maybe good to know also, because we make mistakes, right? So because making mistakes, we create negative karma, right? And it's not only in this life, but since beginner's lifetime, we have created negative karma. Yeah, so you can see sometimes what comes up in dreams, or what comes up just all of a sudden in your mind, and you think, where does it come from? So it's something you're not really used to in a particular period of time, right? So yeah, there's many things you can see. There's a continuation of these patterns, right, over many lifetimes. Yeah. So that means that if you act in a virtuous way, and you prevent negative karma from being created, then every virtuous act has a potential to not only produce happiness, but also to purify negative deeds of the past, right? Yeah. So Shantideva in the Bodhisattva Charavatara says that there's no more superior mental training than bodhicitta in order to purify negative deeds. So why is that? Why is that true? That's a quotation of amazing master, but we have to know why. Why did Shantideva say that? You know? So that means that in order to purify negative deeds, yeah, that's again four factors. Yeah, there's so many lists, you know, you just give me a number and I give you a list. But it is true, those lists makes things very clear, you know. If you define everything clearly. That's why when I was reading some books about psychology in the West, after having studied a little bit in the traditional monastic system, then yeah, I'm not going to sell Buddhism now, but if you see how in Buddhist psychology, how a particular mental factor is like 51 mental factors or 73 or 100 and something, there's many divisions, right? So if you see how a mental factor or one aspect of the mind is defined by its nature, its function, right? How does it react and relate with main mind? It's extremely precise, very well defined. Yeah, and that is examined in debate, etc., etc. Yeah, so yeah, that's why those divisions, they can help, you know. Buddhism is yesterday came up, and also one of the questions today, is very complicated and sometimes a little bit academic kind of approach, especially this tradition of Nalanda. But His Holiness, when we met His Holiness once in Serra, when we had this project to build a house for Westerners, you know, to make it a bit easier, because in early days Serra was not that comfortable, you know, still not as comfortable as my room here, but in the early days it was not very comfortable, you know. You know, this kind of shower outside with a bucket, you know, the kind of hand pump we have in India on the roads. So then during the day it's too hot, so everybody wants to shower in the evening. So then in the evening, if you have a few hundred monks in one compound, it gets a bit busy. You know. So, and then we were walking back from the debate courtyard back to the room, and the rats were bigger than the cats, you know. So it was slightly different conditions than now. But so we thought we build a house for Westerners who can study. You know. So then we presented the project to His Holiness, and His Holiness was very pleased. And then, because we're Westerners, then he said, "Yeah." His Holiness said, "The Buddha, initially, the teaching of the Buddha was very simple, and then these Nalanda scholars, they made it so complicated, you know." But actually, straight away, His Holiness made a joke, but straight away he made a point. He said, "But in these degenerated times, we have more afflictions, so that means we need more logic to counteract those afflictions, right? So we just saw the other day, analytical meditation is needed. Why? Because our afflictions, they do the same thing, you know. I don't like this person. I don't like the situation because of this. Few seconds, and we generate anger. You know, so that's to counteract that. We have to have logic. You know, with this analytical meditation. So that's why Sona said. And if you read a book, especially in relation with emptiness or afflictions, then you read, you think. You know, then it has it has impact. You know, so the more knowledge you get, the more kind of possibility. Of understanding becomes stronger and stronger and clearer and clearer. Yeah. So then, to purify, so if we engage in positive deeds, we prevent negative deeds from happening, then we go up already a bit, right? But still, we have those inclinations or habituations of, you know, of the past, right? So we can purify that. Karma is not fixed, right? So the other story with my friend being in astrology, we also saw that it's not, then he said, it's not that fixed for the future, for a spiritual person, because a spiritual person actually develops the mind, and by that can change karma, right? Yeah, so, to refer back to that. So we can purify. So how do we purify negative karma? Yeah. So if you purify negative karma of the past, engage in virtue, you know, and prevent negative actions, you know, then we go up, right? Yeah, so then the purification happens in a way with four factors, right? So there's regret, you know? So regret is not, as some people have, like, you know, low self-esteem attitude, kind of, oh, I'm so bad, I did this thing, I'm the worst person in the world, kind of. That really doesn't really, it's not very constructive, you know? Regret means, also low self-esteem goes out of the door with regret, you know. Regret means, okay, I did something wrong. Why was it wrong? Because I harmed myself and I harmed another person. Yeah, you said something wrong to another individual, or, you know, physical harm whatsoever, you know, verbal kind of harm, you know, shouting at the person, nasty words. So then you think, oh, that's not correct because that person is now disturbed and I'm disturbed, you know. So you see, have that insight of love, cause and effect, you know, and then you say sorry to yourself, like, well, not only sorry, but sorry to the person, but to yourself you say, oh, I shouldn't do this. This is not correct. This is incorrect behavior, you know. So that is a kind of very honest acknowledgement of something wrong, right? If we acknowledge our own faults and mistakes, then we grow, right? If we don't know our own faults of mistakes, then we make them again and again and again. Yeah. So that means regret is exactly this kind of thinking, oh, incorrect, I shouldn't do this because of this and this and this, right? That's regret, you know? No guilt feeling, because that's not very constructive. Guilt feeling is kind of, doesn't really benefit. So you have this kind of regret, yeah? The correct form of regret, first one. So the second one is the power of reliance. Right, so I just mentioned that Shantideva said bodhicitta is one of the most powerful antidotes for purification. So one aspect, there's few aspects. So one aspect for the reason for that is this power of reliance, right? Because power of reliance means we relate to others, right, in daily life. Every act we do is in relation with others, you know. So there's two persons, technically speaking. We have Buddhas and sentient beings. So a sentient being is a person who has consciousness but not a Buddha. A Buddha is a person who has consciousness but is not a sentient being. It's logic. So in debate courtyard you bait that back and forth, you know. So that means that we have two forms of being, so to say, sentient beings and Buddhas, right? Yeah. So whatever we have done in relation to others, we have done in relation to either of these two, right? Yeah? So that's why the power of reliance is also twofold. The power of reliance is in twofold in the sense of taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and generating bodhicitta, generating a mind that wants to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering, and for that purpose wants to become a Buddha, right? Yeah. So, So that means the power of reliance is twofold. Refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha, and generating the body-mind. Yeah? So that means, because in twofold, it purifies the negativities we have created with the Buddha and the negative we created with sentient beings, because taking refuge, you know, taking refuge, we now respect the Buddha. Maybe in previous lifetimes we shown disrespect, or, you know. That's why we should respect every religion or every form of faith. Yeah, so Dalai Lama often says, you know, there's a difference between having faith and having respect. You know, we have faith in our own kind of spiritual development of a particular tradition, yeah? But we should have respect for others. Why? Because we can see, you know, many other forms of faith, if it's Christianity or Islam or Hinduism or Jainism, whatsoever, yeah, there is certain benefit for society, right? So that we should respect. Yeah? So then in this regard, we might have disrespected those aspects, and in particular for Buddhists with the Buddha, then to take refuge, purifies that aspect, right? And then the power of reliance purifies the negative karma we've done in relation with sentient beings. Because we've harmed sentient beings, and now we wish other sentient beings to be free of harm. You see? Exactly the opposite. You know? Yeah? So that's why bodhicitta is so important in the power, because of this power of reliance. You see? Yeah, this is the second one. And yeah, I have to say one more thing. So, I don't know, among the people attending, if there's non-Buddhists, if you don't consider yourself as a Buddhist, then the second power of reliance, instead of the Buddha, you can think in your own form of fate or leave it out, right? But for bodhicitta, you can generate a mind that wishes others to be free of suffering, right? So that's, you can do the same purification. You don't have to become a Buddhist to purify your mind, right? Yeah, but yeah. So yeah, that's power of reliance. Yeah. Then number three is the actual antidote, right? So we talked about Vajrasattva or prostrations, yeah, kind of Buddhist practices. Also said, you know, the Lama Tsongkhapa did so many to realize emptiness, you know. That means that because of our mind being dull, you know, or not understanding, or not realizing things, you know, is because there's all these obscurations, you know. So that's why purification is extremely important, you know. So then this power of the antidote, there can be any of those practices. You know? So there's practice according to the sutra system, like prostrations, for example. There's practice according to the Vajrayana, like Vajrasattva. Yeah? So you can choose. Yeah? Or, more simplified, just any virtue or any positive thing you do becomes a kind of an antidote. As we just said, whatever is a positive state of mind becomes an antidote to the negative states, right? Yeah? So positive deeds, you know, opposes negative deeds. Yeah? That's why you see people who are very kind to others, you know, do a lot of charity, you know, help others the best way they can. You can see that there's much more openness and kind of peace of mind. Why? Because their level of virtue is higher. You know, if you have people who always commit crimes, they might put up a smile, but inside you can see something is missing, something is lacking. You know, so that means that every virtue becomes actually an antidote to non-virtue, right? So this third power of antidotes can be any virtuous practice. Yeah, but those who want to go further in Buddhist practice later on, there's great advantages in these kind of practices of Vajrasattva and prostrations. If you have these four factors complete, yeah, there's incredible benefits. Yeah, but that maybe we can talk about another time. Yeah, maybe one day we can do kind of, I was thinking, because we do Discovering Buddhism and now we're going to do the basic program, so maybe once a while we can do a weekend of preliminary practices. You know, we go to all the different aspects of the preliminary practices, get them, and the commentaries are there, you know, so maybe one day, because it's very important. Yeah. So then, this power of kasa, antidote, right? Yeah, so there can be any thing that opposes the negative deeds, yeah, the purification aspect, or bodhicitta. So that's what Shantideva said also. If you contemplate bodhicitta, it's so incredible virtuous. Why? Because you generate it for the benefit of all sentient beings without exception. Without exception, you know, without excluding one. That means if you wish them to all be free of suffering, and you want to let them abide in happiness, is infinite causes for happiness, right? Yeah, so that's why His Holiness says, if you want to be happy and you be intelligent, you know, try to cherish others more than yourself, then there you go. Happiness comes. Then you see, someone is always cheerful, you know. Right? Yeah, so that's why if you benefit, but the main motivation should not be I want to be happiness, and that's why I generate bodhicitta. So, because then bodhicitta doesn't really become a very genuine one. You know? Yeah. So yeah, you have to be. So the long-term goal is bodhicitta. And temporary, we get those benefits, right? Yeah. Yeah. So then, generating bodhicitta, or meditating on loving kindness, compassion. Well, just a birthday cake, same thing. The policeman giving a birthday cake to the. You see the news, right? You see all these negative things, you know. I have this app of the BBC, you know, so in the early, when I was in Serra, I watched the news maybe once every 2 or 3 months, when I went to, sometimes to the Bangalore, to the center, and then they give me a very nice guest house to stay in, and there's a TV I hardly use, but sometimes I thought, okay, maybe it's good to watch the news, and then after every few months watching the news, they say, oh, not much different than a few months before, but, you know, if you watch it every day, it look all different. You know, it looks all different because there's so many things going on. But if you watch it once or twice a month or something, it's kind of, oh, very similar. Yeah. But anyway, so I have this app and then I watch the BBC News. So read the news. And then so many negative things. This president attacking that one and this murder and that murder. And there was this story about this Indian man, you know, I just mentioned the police. It's so nice. When you read that, it's kind of automatically, it's like, oh, that's nice. You know, automatically there's some positive with it, you know. So that means every positive deed actually has the potential, you know, to purify even negative thoughts. Very amazing, you know. So that's why, so it can, of course, if it's bodhicitta and everything, it becomes stronger, but every virtuous deed has the power, right? Yeah. Yeah, there's some more stories, but yeah, let me never finish. So then the fourth one, this is the power of resolve, you know, the power of resolve. That means you promise not to do that again, not to make the same mistake again, you know. So it's very, very powerful. If you really promise, you make a commitment for yourself and even do it in front of an altar, it's very strong because next time you almost engage in something you don't like to engage in, with this negative or shouting at the person again, because you have this power of thought, you think it's strong because you remember, you know, with mindfulness, with alertness, you be alert, oh, the situation. And then with mindfulness, you remember, you know, oh, I made this promise, you know, and it's true. If I engage again, I get into trouble again and I can create problems for self and others, right? So that's why the power of resolve can be very strong and very powerful. Yeah, it's just promise not to engage in that deed again for a period of time. So try to promise for a period you can promise, not I'm not getting angry anymore for the rest of my life, you know. So that's not really going to happen, right? Yeah. So in the same sojong, I just mentioned the sojong, you know, the bimonthly confession for monks and nuns, you know, where they use this prayer instead of, you know, this verse can be used instead of the complete sutra on the individual liberation pratyamoksha sutra. So in that bimonthly confession, His Holiness Dalai Lama told the story that there was one very honest practitioner who also did this kind of confession, and then in the end we kneel down and then they say, do you see your faults as faults? Yes, I do. And that repeats 3 times, and then it says, do you henceforth restrain yourself? And then you say, yes, I do. And then this practitioner says, I will try, he said, out loud, you know. But it's a very kind of honest way of practice, you know. So that means we should, with the power of resolve, we should also, but commit yourself, try to do it for a day, or then for 2 days, then for 3 days, and then we progress, you know. That's, yeah. Yeah, so that's a little bit the non-academic aspect of Buddhism, I think, or not. So it's kind of more practical aspects, but yeah, in order to really understand, you know, what is regret, you know, to understand it well, then you study these mental factors and then it makes more sense, right? So that's why we have this academic backup to understand these practical aspects of life, you know. So that's why you can see His Holiness Dalai Lama teaches the most extensive, profound teachings, but also sometimes a very easy, understandable way. You know, but it's all backed up with this kind of logic and scriptural sources to prove, you know, even these kind of things we just talked about. You know? So that's why the more knowledge you have behind these kind of day-to-day life things, the stronger your kind of capacity to put it into practice becomes, right? So the more you study, the more things you have to think about, right? Yeah, so then it becomes very powerful, yeah. Yeah, so that's what I was planning to say about purifying negative deeds. And in relation to that, one of the last questions I just read is so nice, because I can see on my iPad when a person, I just checked before I came here on this kind of document, Google document, I'm not sure what it was called. But so then you can see the person typing. So I was reading the last one, and then it also says, but what can you actually purify? That's very important to know also, you know, because same as positive state of mind can purify negative state of mind can destroy positive, right? So that's why Shantideva said, has this chapter on patience, right? Because practicing anger, not practicing, if you, we all practice anger quite well, I think, but you know, if you engage in anger or let anger come up, it destroys it destroys positive potentials, right? Yeah, so how does it work? What can we purify and what is actually being destroyed by these afflictions? Anger is one example, but all afflictions, because they're negative or not virtuous, they have the potential to destroy virtue, right? And the other way around, we can purify. You see, it's because in the nature of dependent origination. It's true, right? If you wake up with a very positive mind and we sit down and we generate good motivation for the day, and you know, so we have breakfast, everything is fine, then we look at our, you know, WhatsApp messages whatsoever, and then there's this annoying message from somebody, and all of a sudden your positivity goes down the drain. You know, so that means that negative thoughts can destroy positive potentials, right? So what actually, in from the point of view of technically speaking, from karma, what is being destroyed by in an act of purification, and what is being destroyed with negative states of mind in relation with positive karma? Yeah, so it is important to know. There's a lot of debate. You know, the most clear text is Eliminating the Thought by Lama Tsongkhapa. Thupten Jinpa will, I think, publish quite soon a very incredible commentary by Lama Tsongkhapa on the Madhyamika Avatara. You know? So there, and also in Shantideva, very clearly, but in Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary on the Madhyamika Avatara, very clear what actually is being destroyed and what remains. You know? So also in Lamrim, it's not that clear. But in the Madhyamika philosophy, especially this text, very clear. And there's also other texts within certain programs of the master program. There's one text called The General Meaning of the Middle Way. It's a text by Jessen Chugyu Gyatson. It's just been translated recently. I just met for that because I'm just looking at it, because in 2 weeks' time, they asked me to give a presentation on the 8 uncommon points of Prasangika view in Nalanda. So also we're going to use this kind of equipment. So then that's why I was reading this text. But we studied that text in the monastery quite a bit. So Jessen Chogyal Gyaltsen also very clearly mentions these points, referring back to Lama Tsongkhapa's interpretation. Yeah. So by purification, what can be destroyed, right? So when we purify and we have all those four factors complete, as we just discussed, then we purify, technically speaking, the potential for the result to come about. Right? The potential for the result to come about. So there's a seed, and the seed has a potential. Right? So that potential is being taken away if you purify, you know, with all those four potent powers. Right? So the potential for means that if you have done something wrong, even the act of killing or whatsoever, then the result will not come into being. You see? If you do it correctly with all the four opponent powers, with the correct method and the mind being the right motivation, stable of mind, everything should be complete, right? Then that's possible, you know? So the potential for the result to come about is being taken away. But the seed, that cannot be destroyed by these four opponent powers. In order to destroy the seed, that's why this is my introduction to the next level, you need to realize emptiness. You see? So that's my selling technique to keep people, because we're dropping people because of the weather, maybe. And it's also academic, and then, enjoy life. Now it's still possible in the sun. You know, people can walk out, but, the lockdown is a little bit eased, so people can, exercise and go out and etc. But to keep people for tomorrow, that's why I'm talking about this. So the seed cannot be destroyed by the four opponent powers. You need a direct perception of emptiness. You see? Yeah. So why? That I will discuss later. It keeps you a little bit, tuned on the Zoom. Yeah. So that's the four opponent powers. Without. That's I have to say, right? Otherwise, my classmates, when they see this, they will debate me on this point. They say, but what a person who has realized emptiness and uses the four opponent powers. So it's a different story. But if you haven't a direct perception of emptiness, right, and you use these four opponent powers, then you can only purify the potential for the reasons to come about, right? But the seed cannot be destroyed. Yeah? The seed can only be destroyed by a person with direct perception of emptiness, of course. A person with direct perception of emptiness also has those four opponent powers, right? Yeah, so you have to make a distinction, be very clear. So in debates, we learn how to be very precise, also when you say something. Sometimes you think something and you say something different, then you're finished. You get in debate, kind of heavy. The people give you a kind of hard time, you know? Yeah. Debate is very amazing because it's so good for the eye to destroy this eye, because sometimes you think, oh, now I know it, and then you defend, and then somebody debates you, and then actually you see you didn't have it correct, and then the eye goes like that, it's very good, yeah. And Tibetans are very good in teasing each other, if you have a big nose, or you're a bit bald, or you're a bit fat, they're not with a harmful intent, but just seeing if that eye comes up, My roommate, I had a roommate for many years, he was very good with that. So we always went to the edge and say, oh, now that you're getting angry. So in the beginning it's very difficult, but on the long term, very beneficial, you see? So that's why a person who criticizes you, let you come to the edge, so kind. So at that time, it was very tough. The conditions of living were rough, and my roommate was quite, sometimes. And the room is like the beds just 1 meter apart, right? So it's not that much space. You cannot just go somewhere and be by yourself. That's not possible in a monastery. So it's a very good practice. So that's to cut, to conclude. So we talked about this verse, right? Do not commit any unwholesome actions. Engage in perfect wholesome actions. Yeah. So for the same truth is true, the purification of negative deeds, the potential for the result to come about can be taken away, right? But not the seed. You see that? But the seed can be destroyed with a direct perception of emptiness, right? You got me there? Yeah, I see people doing like this, then I know I'm okay. Normally there's people here and then I can see the faces, but now I have the full screen of 25, so now I can see. It's good. It's better this way. So if people start falling asleep, then I crack a joke or tell a story. But I can only see these, 25, right? So I don't know the other ones. But So here again, to repeat, so with purification practice, you can take away the potential for the reason to come about, right? But the seed cannot be taken away. And the seed can be destroyed with direct perception of emptiness, right? Yeah, I see. Yeah, one person is waving, sitting together with her husband. Now they go on the picture of Tara again. Yeah, don't mention any names. Yeah. So, Kasa, so the potential for the reason to come about is to be taken away, and then with direct perception of emptiness, the seed is taken away. You see that? Very interesting. So negative karma, together with the seeds, can be completely taken away. You see that? Right? Then positive karma can also be destroyed with negative states of mind, right? Anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, you know? They can destroy, in a similar way, the potential for the reasons to come about of a positive thing. And that's very annoying because it's so difficult to do things well. And then it gets destroyed by getting angry for a few seconds. You know, so there's all these scriptural sources that, you know, 1 second of anger to bodhisattva, you know, destroys a thousand eons of positive deeds, you know. So it's quite annoying to see that, yeah. But so that's why we have to practice patience, you know, because we do things well, then we get angry again, do things well, angry again. So it's no progress, you know. So that's why practicing patience is so important, you know. Yeah, so then this negative state of anger, for example, takes away this potential for the result to come about. But the seed is still there, you see? Right? The seed cannot be destroyed. That's a very interesting point. Yeah? So that means that negative karma, together with the seeds, yeah, can be completely taken away. You know? Well, positive karma, the seed can never be destroyed. Though the potential for the result to come about can be destroyed, the seed never can be destroyed. So that proves development is possible. You see? If I do like this, I see my arm very long. So that means that it's not easy. It's not that close by, you know, the enlightenment and liberation, but it's a bit longer. But it's possible. You see, it's one very important point. Next to, I made a quotation of the Seventh Dalai Lama about Buddha potential, right? So that we have, and then also we have this aspect. And we saw that afflictions or destructive emotions are not considered reality, so that's why they can be taken away. And we saw that they're not in a part of the mind, so that's why destructive emotions can be taken away, right? And the momentary changing, so that's also why they can be taken away. And then even in a deeper level, where we're talking about right now, we see this incredible potential. Yeah? So we have two Buddha potentials. Yeah? So two Buddha potentials. One, we talked about a few days ago when I made a quotation, Janjo Chogyo Rinzai Chen, you know. So that means that the ultimate nature of the mind of the Buddha is exactly the same as the ultimate nature of our mind, right? Being empty of inherent existence. Yeah. So that is a Buddha potential by nature, right? So that every sentient being has, even a mosquito. Yeah, there was one question or part of a question about, you know, when is a sentient being or not, and can you, you know, born in those states? Even a mosquito is very small, you know? But has consciousness. Consciousness doesn't have form, you know, so we don't need anything like that. Yeah. So now I'm lost. Kasa. What did I say?
You were lost.
Yeah, before that. Yeah.
Mosquito.
Yeah, before that. No, I was just talking about, again. So the seeds, yeah. So we have two Buddha potentials. That's why I was again. Yeah, sometimes also I get distracted, you know, by stories or, you know, remember something and then, you know, goes. So, so we have these two Buddha potentials. So the Buddha potential by nature is the ultimate reality of the mind of a Buddha, empty of inherent existence. That nature is the same as the ultimate nature of our mind, right? Our mind is also empty of inherent existence. Yeah, that's the Buddha potential by nature. All sentient beings, and then I went to the mosquito, right?
Yeah.
So then, all sentient beings, they have that potential, even a mosquito, you know, because they empty of inherent existence, see? So that Buddha potential is present, that's the nature, Buddha potential by nature, but there's also a Buddha potential we call that has to be developed, right? And that's exactly what we're just talking about. The possibility to develop is present because negative deeds can be completely destroyed together with the seeds, and positive deeds, only the potential for the results to come about they can be destroyed, but the seeds cannot. You see? Very positive thing. So sometimes we get a little bit depressed, oh, it's so difficult, and then it's just a matter of time and effort. Then we change. Yeah, so that's a thing I was planning to talk about. Yeah. And then we saw the seeds of negative karma cannot be taken away without direct perception of emptiness. And in the last line of that verse, last two lines, do not commit any unwholesome actions. Engage in perfect wholesome actions. We just covered, right? Yeah, we talked about more or less. Subdue your mind thoroughly. This complete subduing of your mind is what we're talking about, eliminating ignorance together with the seeds, right? Yeah? So that means that also you need emptiness. Yeah? You see that? That's why the Buddha said you need emptiness. Yeah? Subduing, we have different levels. Yeah? We practice patience to subdue the mind. But to get rid of the seeds, eventually you have to realize emptiness, right? Yeah. So that's what then the Buddha said. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So then, if you act in accordance with law of cause and effect, you know, if you act in accordance with law of cause and effect, then you already have more happiness and create causes for higher rebirths, right? The precious rebirth, yeah? But you cannot achieve liberation because you have to get rid of the seed, right? So that's why you need to realize emptiness, you know? So that's why the third line says, subdue your mind thoroughly. That's completely subduing of the mind, meaning no afflictions present anymore. Yeah, that's, some people find that difficult. So they think, oh, well, no anger anymore? Not even for a second? Is that possible or not? Yeah, that's a question. So up till now, we can practice patience and prevent from getting angry for hours and hours and hours, and we practice more patience, and then it becomes maybe a few minutes. If you do well, and then maybe later on a few seconds, you see, and later on you get a little bit irritated, but it's under control. You see, so there's a development in that process. You know, so then the more you reflect on emptiness, that development will become enhanced. So in one way, we have to apply antidotes directly opposing the affliction, patience against anger, right? Contentment against attachment, for example, or desire, right? So every affliction or destructive emotion has its own kind of direct antidote, you see? But the antidote to everything is this emptiness, you see? Why? Because the root for afflictions to arise is rooted in this ignorance, as we saw in the 12 links, right? Yeah, so this ignorance of grasping at a concrete self, or inner and existing self. Based on that, we get angry. Based on that, we generate attachment and desire. I need this, I this, I that, this, that, 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 this. Or I, you see? iPhone, my iPad, you know? Zoom is different, yeah? I don't want anything but I. Yeah, iPhone, iPad. iWatch, I think. I don't have an iWatch, but I don't, maybe it's called iWatch, is it? Yeah, I know. Some people have those black things, and then you do like that, and then it comes up. It's kind of also I. So there's a lot of things to with I, you know. So that means that these afflictions, as we saw in a few examples we talked about, you know, to get angry based on a person who, you know, uses a lot of verbalization of I, me, myself, you know. It's more inclination to not only mental problems, but also physical ones. Very interesting. So the Buddha, 2,500 years already ago, said this is the root of the problem. You know, this concrete concept of I am me, or I am mine, you know. I am mine is mostly the better translation. Yeah? I am mine. Yeah. So based on that ignorance, we get into trouble. Yeah. Based on that ignorance, we say, same as we saw in the news, like was it a week ago or something, I'm not sure. This person in this apartment, there were a few people talking down below, it was too noisy. He asked them to stop talking, they didn't stop, so he shot them. You know, so why did he did the act of murder? Because I, my apartment, my space, how dare these people disturb that? You see? And commit. I have a lot of experience, not with killing, but not in this life, luckily, but with the eye coming up and then getting angry or something like that. You know, I had this kind of orphan to take care of for some time. And I had my own room for some time. I had to live with a roommate. They had my own space. So comfortable. You know? And then I got this little student to take care of, you know, in my space, also 1 meter apart. So there's no space to. And then when I wanted to do something, then it was not possible because I had to do something else which I didn't like to do, you know, sometimes, you know. So it's a very very simple example. You can see this movement or not. So if there's a table here, right, then you live with somebody else together, and you say, oh, I put here. But your roommate or somebody else in the house say, no, I put there. And even something like that can cause a problem. You know, I put a mug here or there or there. So it's kind of, you see? So that means that this ignorance has to be understood well in order to cut this root. Yeah, the seed has to be taken away. You see that? You know, that's what we're talking about here. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my sales talk for the next subject, emptiness. Yeah.
Yeah.
But His Holiness also says, very interesting. You know, we see that ignorance is is a cause for these problems. This concept of an ignorant existing I am mine. And you think, I need it, I need that. And when you separate it from the object, you get angry. When you, you know, when object of attachment, you always want to have the object, but when you separate from it, you get really annoyed, angry. When there's object you get angry at, then when it comes close, you get annoyed. You know? You see? So that's all done with I. You know, with this, not just a conventional I, but an I that's been seen as existing from its own side. Right? So the question is, does it exist the way it appears? That's the question. Same with all our other destructive emotions. We see what appears to the mind is not in accordance with reality, right? Iron Beck, you know, often quoted by His Holiness, this professor, he says 90%, you know, is mentally created, a person you get angry at. What you get angry at is the mental image, it's not the person. Very interesting comment. He didn't call mental image, he said image, right? Yeah. So we say in Tibetan, or in technical terms, meaning generality. This kind of conceptual consciousness uses these kind of mental images. Yeah. So when I look at the screen, I see you all there, not all of you, only 25, but then I close my eyes and I still can remember how you all look like, right? Yeah, more or less. So that was all very small, but more or less. So that means that when I close my eyes and I think about it, that's conceptual consciousness. Yeah, which uses a mental image. That mental image is not you. Right? Right? So when we get angry at a person, it's involved with this mental image that blows up all these faults that a person maybe even doesn't have. Right? And then we get angry. It's very stupid. Because the mental image is not the person. Same as when I mentioned my friend in the Netherlands in traffic, he used to get so angry behind the steering wheel in winter, you know, when it was traffic jams. But the person in front has the windows closed, listen to music, and doesn't hear him. And he was just shouting. You know, so that means he only has himself, right? Yeah. But that is all based on this mental image. It's not the person, you see? So the same is true for ignorance. There's a few more things to that, because there's also the mere appearance of it. And then adherence or grasping at it. Yeah, there's many aspects. Yeah. But you can relate to that maybe in that way better. Yeah. So that means, based on our inclinations, there's also one question comes to that. Since beginningless lifetime, there was no beginning of consciousness. And since beginningless lifetime, we have had this habituation. Right? Same with a baby coming out of the womb, you know, knows how to drink the milk of the mother. They don't teach the baby, hey, you put your mouth there and then you do like this, you do like that. It just knows, right? So that's kind of a habituation pattern from maybe previous lifetime, right? Yeah, you see? So there's this habituation that causes something to happen and come into being. Yeah? Yeah. So then since beginningless lifetime, we have this habituation, because since beginningless lifetime, we were born, you know, sometimes as other creatures, but sometimes as humans, and then we know how to act and how to drink milk, right? Yeah. So, and breathing, same thing, you know, they know how to do it. It's complex. And say, yeah, it's in the genes and everything. But of course, it's in the genes and everything. But that's also caused by cause and effect, right? Same as the Big Bang started the universe, but before the Big Bang was something that caused the Big Bang to happen, right? So that's why calling it Big Bounds is a much better theory, you know? So there's also a consciousness. So since beginningless lifetime, we have had this habituation of thinking everything exists from its outside, concrete. Our body, our mind, the table, the cup, you know, the screen, the computer, everything around us looks so existing from its own side, right? Yeah, that's really true if you analyze. Ooh. But the question is that reality or not? Yeah, we saw with anger, when you get angry at a person, it's based on this mental image, but it's not the person, right? So it's not reality, actually. You see? The person you're angry at is not is actually you angry at a mental image, but it's not the person. You see? So, very interesting that things, this ignorance is there since the beginning of this lifetime, seeing things existing concrete from its own side. So seeing things existing, or it appears like that, but things don't exist that concrete, as we can see in quantum mechanics as well. You know, on the subatomic level, you know, where the electron is depends on the observer and when the observer is observing, you know, time and locality, you know. So it's very much interdependent. Yeah, so that's why the Buddha taught, you know, this teaching on dependent origination. So that's why the first day I quoted that from Nagarjuna's Fundamental Wisdom, 27th chapter. You know, you eliminate wrong views. Sorry, moved out of compassion. The first one, you eliminate wrong views. Teacher of the sublime Dharma, to Gautam Buddha pay homage. You know? So teacher of the sublime Dharma, that's what we're talking about, the Dharma of dependent origination. Because if you understand interdependence, you will come to understand that things don't exist from their own side, right? So that's why when Lama Tsongkhapa did this 4-year retreat, or 3-year and a few months here and there, we did all mandalas, prostrations, reading the scriptures, meditating, you know, it's very interesting. He saw Manjushri, just like I see you, not on the screen, but the people who sit here, like that. He saw Manjushri. You know? This is quite amazing, isn't it? But still, Manjushri told him, Manjushri didn't say, oh, here, there you have it. You're done. Not like that. Manjushri said, you go in retreat, purify negative deeds, accumulate merit, and read the scriptures. Read the text. Academic stuff, you know? Pretty much very hardcore academic stuff, you know? So that's what Lama Tsongkhapa did. And then not reading like a novel, but reading, analyze. Reading, analyze. You know? Then after those 4 years, you know, he had a dream about one of the 17 pendants of Nalanda, you know, Buddhapalita, who put a text. Also the text Buddhapalita composed is a commentary on this particular text we're doing. It's in one way the text we did the 26th chapter, right? So the text we're gonna do now, the 18th chapter, is very precious, you know, because Buddhapalita wrote a commentary on that text and then put it on the crown of Lama Tsongkhapa in the dream. And the next day, Lama Tsongkhapa was reading that text, same line, Kelta Pumpo Dakina, the same thing as we're gonna discuss. Very moving. Then he realized emptiness. You know? He saw that the I doesn't exist the way it appears. He saw the lack of inherent existence. So Lama Tsongkhapa was so moved. And then he thought, oh, the Buddha is so kind. Because without these teachings, you will never eliminate suffering. You know. So then Lama Tsongkhapa was so inspired. And then he wrote this in praise of dependent origination. He did one course here in Jamyang last year. Very inspiring. You know? So then also he praises the Buddha because of the law of actually the teaching on dependent origination. Same as Nagarjuna. If you read the beginning of the Fundamental Wisdom, it's very similar. The praise to the Buddha, you know, that things don't exist from their own side because of dependent origination. You know? So then, this dependent origination is extremely important to be understood. Yeah. So tomorrow we have 2 sessions. So we go over maybe 2 aspects of emptiness. One, dependent origination, and another, logic that's been used, one and different. Yeah, to understand what is emptiness all about. So I put it also in a little write-up that's been given yesterday. You can, that's from that course we did here, Realizing Emptiness. It's just a summary of the Buddhist tenets, basically, not much more. So because dependent origination, right, has 2 terms, dependent and origination. So that's why sometimes Tibetan, you see, Tibetan or Sanskrit is very helpful, because you can see that every syllable has a lot of meaning, right? And that has been defined and it's been described, and then, so Tendel or Tendel Jungwa, so Tenjung, yeah, so dependent origination, just keep the term simple. So dependent means nothing can exist from its own side because it's in the nature of dependence, right? Yeah. So that prevents us from falling into an extreme called eternalism, thinking that everything exists from its own side. That is not true, that cannot be true, because everything is in nature of interdependence, right? Like, for example, the table, the cup, the computer, the Zoom, it looks to appear all from its own side. But actually, so many causes and conditions need to be present to make it happen, right? That we saw a few days ago. It's all down. And then I went from different mics and then end up with this one. Looks cool? Or no? I look like a rock star, or kind of a rapper. You know? There's actually a song by... I always said Run DMC, but then in Tushita Dharamsala I gave a course, and a lot of youngsters, and they say, no, sir, it's not Run DMC, it's De La Soul. They corrected me. It's a song, and it goes like, me, myself, and I. So here I have this kind of, me, myself, and I, like they do like this or something. Yeah, anyway. So yeah, so now I get lost again. Yeah. So yeah, we look at the screen, and it all looks very concrete. The computer, the people, you know. Some people are frozen, some people are moving, but still it looks all concrete, right? Yeah. But it depends on so many causes and conditions. So that means it is not that inherently, you know, exists from some side, because it's a nature of dependence. Same if you look at a table, same if you look at a watch, same if you look at any object. If you look at a quantum level, it's completely different. So different that we don't even really understand what's going on, but it means everything is a very complex law of interdependence, right? And the subtler you go, the more difficult it will be to be understood, of course, right? So, so at least you get the outline that things don't exist in that concrete way they appear. Yeah, so that's one aspect, dependence, the first syllable. Origination, yeah, meaning that conventionally things exist. Yeah, it's not that nothing exists at all. Some people are nihilism. Oh, if the self doesn't exist inherently, then maybe it doesn't exist at all. Yeah? So that's also not true, because conventionally, if you put your hands against the wall, you know that there's something there, right? So conventionally, we listen, we think, we write things down, we contemplate. Yeah, so that means origination is present, you know. Yeah, so this origination prevents us from falling into the extreme of what's called nihilism, that nothing exists at all. So that's why the reason of dependent origination is being called the king of reasons, for this reason. Because you don't fall into extreme of eternalism, that everything exists from its own side, and you don't fall into the extreme of nihilism, that nothing exists. Right, because there's laws, cause, and effect, right? And that's kind of falling out into two extremes. Yeah, that's one important thing to know from dependent origination. Yeah, dependent, you don't fall into the extreme of eternalism, because things are dependent, so nothing can exist from its own side. And origination helps us not to fall into the extreme of nihilism, because conventionally there's law of cause and effect, right? So dependent origination and emptiness are two sides of a coin. You know, you can flip over. So that means that one proves the other. Because things are in the nature of interdependence, nothing can exist from its own side, right? And because nothing exists from its own side, there's interdependence. If things exist from their own side, there's no relation between two objects, right? That's not true. Yeah, that's true on the quantum level, that's true on the monocle level, that's true on the level of objects. You know. Everything is interdependent, so nothing exists from its own side. See that? Yeah, so that proves that... So dependent origination proves emptiness, And emptiness proves dependent origination. Yeah? So that's why it sometimes says also in the same text, Nagarjuna, says the meaning of dependent origination is emptiness, and the meaning of emptiness is dependent origination. Very interesting. You know? So with one you can prove the other. Yeah, so that you can see why it's so important to understand dependent origination, because then you understand emptiness. And if you understand emptiness well, then you can see that things don't exist that concrete out there. You know? So then His Holiness Dalai Lama says often that, you know, if you think about emptiness often, you know, if you first you try to correct understanding, and the more you think about emptiness, His Holiness says to he mentioned, I think once when he gave the 400 verses of Aryadeva and Dharamsala, he said, if you, for example, 16 times a day reflect on emptiness, then in between, of course, because of the habituation, you think, I mean, it's quite difficult for us human beings in society to to make sure we have the contemplation of emptiness every 16 times a day, but if you do it on a regular basis, if you train your mind, His Holiness says, it looks like afflictions don't arise. Very interesting comment. It looks like, His Holiness says, of course, His Holiness doesn't arise, but is for us kind of a message, right? So that means if you think about emptiness, not only you start to making progress and start to realizing and later eliminating that seed, yeah, we have to eliminate, but even on a day-to-day life, it helps so much. If you see things are in the nature of interdependence, the problems, they don't become that concrete, right? Because they're empty of that concreteness. It's very helpful. Very helpful. And everything is in the nature of dependence. And then this virus business, you know, the coronavirus who came in the planet, you know, on the planets, with the, from the bats and then to something else, or the humans. When we were in Maratika, it's just before I went to the retreat there, we just heard about the virus because it was already a little bit in Italy and other places, but at that time I thought, Rimshi told me to do a retreat, I do a retreat. So I was cut off of internet and everything. And there's a few caves there in Maratika with a lot of bats. And the bats there, you make noise and make droppings. So barefoot, you go to in outside the cave, you know. But in the back of my mind, always a little bit like, oh, maybe, you know, the coronavirus also originated, because bats have like 150 or something like 200 different viruses or something with them, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once in Serra also, there was in Kerala, in South India, there was a kind of situation also with bats. They had this kind, they eat the fruit, you know. The fruit bats, we had a lot of fruit bats in our garden in Serra, in my house, the house of Western monks. So at night they come, you know, you can hear the wings, you know, and then they get on the guava fruit. So in the morning you saw the guava fruit half been eaten, and then all the, you know, they fly, and then when they fly, they leave their droppings on the wall. So yeah, also that we, and then I said, there was one person who had a sickness from a mango, and I said, oh, don't eat mangoes. You see that concrete kind of thing, you know? But actually, it's dependent on so many causes and conditions, right? So now also with this virus, there's so many causes and conditions. And maybe it mutates and it gets better and gets worse or disappears again. You know, it's also possible. Many viruses in South India we had with these bats, they just disappeared after some time. You know, so possible. Nothing is that concrete. But initially, oh, we see it as a very concrete problem. Of course, we have to address the problem, but how we mentally react, you know, we can prevent a lot of suffering. You know, because if you understand this reality, you understand emptiness, then you go with the flow, so to say, right? Of course, you act and you do things bad, but you don't get that disturbed, you see? So that's why also emptiness, incredibly beneficial. Though it's not easy, yeah, but a little bit understanding of it already, according to Aryadeva, shakes samsara, right? So, yeah. So that's a little bit of my sales talk for the two sessions tomorrow. I thought I have to build it up, otherwise I lose more people, you know? So then, because it's true, as soon as you start talking about emptiness, I have some experience with that, then some people fall asleep, some people they walk away, some people don't come back anymore, because you need kind of, they say you need kind of merit for emptiness, because it's the opposite of emptiness, which is grasping at inherent existence, is with us since beginner's lifetime, right? And it's so strong, and we believe in that, and then anything else we don't like to believe in, or we get, you know, fall asleep when yeah, it happens often. So when you see teachings somewhere and the teacher is touching emptiness, then you look around and then some people start walking away or falling asleep, you know? Yeah. So I can see on the screen actually what's happening in your room. So if I have a number, I can, you know, send you a message or something. But yeah. So that means that emptiness is not easy. And why is it not easy? Because we have habituated ourselves with the opposite of it, right? If you have an addiction like smoking, you know, or drinking for a very long period of time, you have this strong attachment, and attachment is very sneaky. Attachment thinks, oh, if I have this, I will be happy, you know. It's very sneaky, you know. So that attachment is so strong to the addiction that when you give it up, then sneaky attachment comes and you fall back again, you see. So you believe this attachment is actually not correct, not considered reality, but you believe it's reality, you see. So the same with ignorance. It's very strong, and that's why the opposite, or what is opposed to it, is emptiness. It becomes difficult. You know, some people even find it mentally difficult to talk about it or think about it. So that means the ignorance is so strong. So that's why we have this combination of purification, accumulation of merit, study, you know, reflect. So when you do retreat, same thing. We went a few times over a kind of schedule, right? To make a schedule for a retreat. So we went to do some prayers, and so in the traditional Lamrim, you do a practice called Jorje, preliminary practices, yeah, which includes Sevelim prayer, which includes purification, which includes accumulation of merit, you know. So that means that if you, you know, some people of you already know maybe more about the Dharma than I do and have done more retreats than I have done. So, but that means that if you do a Lamrim retreat, for example, you know, you do a few prayers, but also try to slowly, if you like to improve and move forward, slowly try to introduce these practices, Vajrasattva, or prostrations, or mandalas, or guru yoga, you know. So then slowly, then we, you know, and then if you want one hour session, you know, you do kind of half an hour prayers and these kind of practices, and then 15 minutes meditation or something. Then things will happen, you know. That's what Lama Tsongkhapa was being told. Manjushri came in front. His Holiness often says, some people, they pray, oh, may I see Manjushri, may I see Nagarjuna, may I see the Buddha, you know. Then His Holiness says, okay, but if Nagarjuna, the Buddha, or Manjushri was here, they will say the same thing, study this text, you know. They cannot give the realizations to you or take away your suffering, or yeah, they cannot do that, right? The Buddha said, you know, I cannot take away your suffering. I cannot wash away your sins, you know. I cannot give my realizations to you, but I can show you how to do it, you see. So that's what we have to do in retreat, you know. Make sure the mind gets the right conditions with prayers, purification, accumulation of merit. Then we study, then the contemplations, and then things happen, you know. So there's many meditators, like some lamas, I was talking with Lobanla, one of the person in head of the monastery in Maratika, especially in Nyingma tradition, a lot of emphasis on preliminary practices. There's one lama in Solugumbu. He said he did all the preliminaries, you know, Vajrasattva 100,000 times, prostration 100,000 times, mandala 100,000 times, 10 times. So that's quite rare in modern times to find a person who did 1,000,000 of each, right? So, but yeah, Lama Tsongkhapa also did the same, and many lamas of the lineage advise these kind of things, you know. Yeah. So then, on top of that, study, analyze, you know, then things will happen. Yeah, that's only for those who are more serious, those who are quite new, then slowly see what's most beneficial for your mind initially. But those who are more inclined to move in a particular direction, you know, then these things can be quite important. Yeah. So that's also why we do the meditation. We do the meditation with the white light, you know, as a purification aspect. Yeah. So now we're going to do the same meditation. Everybody's okay or not? You can see if people are moving, or if you have to stretch your legs or something, or everything okay? Yeah. And I can just drink some water. Yeah, so yeah, that's why when we do the meditation in the beginning, we do the white light, right? As we did yesterday, I think. No, yeah. So now, having understood to a certain extent those four opponent powers, you put them into practice. Yeah, with the white light. You think about negative things you've done in this or previous lifetimes, have regret. You know, generate a good motivation. Yeah, then the white light becomes the antidote. Right, number three of the four opponent powers. Right, yeah. So number three, in this case, I said you can do vajrasattva or prostrations or meditate on bodhicitta or accumulate virtue. Right. So in this case, the antidote is this white light, right? Purification. Then with the yellow golden light, you imagine you get the potentials for the results to come about. In a particular, the result of the subject of the meditation we have to meditate upon. So I think today, maybe we make it a little bit more in accordance with what we've discussed last few days, right? So try to see that out of this concrete concept of I am me, right? There is kind of an affliction, anger, attachment, jealousy, pride that arises. Sorry. And based on that mental affliction, we might say something to a person incorrectly, or, you know, verbal abuse or whatsoever. You know, try to see, or physically. It doesn't have to, you know, punch the person in the face with ugly face, you're an ugly face like that, something like that. You know, that also disturbs, right? Our appearance. You know, you have people who laugh and smiley and you know, in public transport. So I don't see videos very often. Some now I got also WhatsApp. You know, before I just had this Nokia phone, you could call a person and send an SMS. That was it. But now I have the smartphone, then I thought, when I go to London, come on, you cannot walk in the city around with this Nokia yak phone. You know, you have to have something you can communicate with people. Mm-hmm. So that's why I took a smartphone. But then, yeah, smartphone, you get this kind of, you know, I'm not into social media and those kind of things, but WhatsApp I use, right? So then, one of my very, very dear friends, also lives in the UK, I know him for many, many years ago, more than 20 years. So he's a very easygoing personality, and he said, "Oh, send me one of those funny videos, you know, like one person maybe you saw. He has his iPad and then walking inside on the ground, the tube. I don't know which country it was, and he started laughing. And then you see all those faces changing of all the people in the same coach, and in the end, everybody's laughing, everyone's smiling. It's a very funny one. If you like, I can send you, but." Joking, that's a joke, okay? So that means that, you know, physically an expression can harm or benefit, right? Yeah. So think that how in the analytical meditation, how ignorance comes, right? This very concrete I, you get angry at a person or aversion, and you give an ugly face or you say something nasty, yeah? And see or have a negative thought about a person, right? Activities of body, speech, and mind, and see how it actually disturbs oneself and others. That interdependent nature, right? And try to see that also that the person you get angry at is that mental image, is that concrete aspect that actually doesn't exist. You see? Yeah, so maybe we do that in analytical meditation, that practical. Yeah? Yeah, so we sit again, as we already sitting. I think everybody's sitting. Yeah, some people only up to here, so I cannot see if they're standing or sitting. But yeah, so everybody is comfortable. Yeah, then yeah, we can do the 9-round breathing, and then we do the counting of the breath. Yeah, so with the counting of the breath, again, uses two mental factors, alertness and mindfulness. We count, the object of concentration is the count, right? If the mind gets distracted, don't pay attention. With alertness, you notice it, that you get distracted. And with mindfulness, you bring your mind back to the concentration, the object. Yeah? Yeah? Everybody ready? Yeah. So then, we do a 9-round breathing. You know already, right? Right index finger, left nostril. Into your right. Out to your left. Again, into your right. Out to your left. One more time. change. I have to be careful. But then both nostrils. Yeah, so then when the mind is settled down, yeah, then we do the concentration meditation and counting of the breath. And then make sure you have just two mental factors. As soon as you get distracted, be aware with alertness. And with mindfulness, you bring your mind back to the object of concentration with the counting of the breath. Yeah? So let's do that for about a minute or two, the counting of the breath. So then when the mind is a bit more placed, right, then imagine, before we start to do the analytical meditation, then in front of oneself is Sakyamuni Buddha, and surrounding yourself all sentient beings, and then think without understanding destructive emotions and without understanding emptiness. I will never be able to help myself and others, you know. And for this purpose, you request Sakyamuni Buddha in front. Yeah, so that's kind of power of reliance to a certain extent. And you pay respect to the Buddha, and then you you request a blessing of inspiration, and then this white light comes from his heart to the crown of your head, and you think that all negative deeds you've created in this and previous lifetimes, over which you regret, gets completely purified. You know? So try to think like that. So the white light comes from his heart to the crown of your head, filling your whole body, and having regrets over negative deeds you've done in this and previous lifetimes. Yeah? So let's do that visualization for about a minute or two. So now you can think that your whole body is filled with this white nectar light, and you're completely purified. This is very important. Have strong faith it happened. Yeah? And then make a strong prayer to the Buddha and say, okay, from now on I'm going to do better. Yeah, the power of resolve. So try to do that. And then in the same way, request the Buddha for blessing and inspiration. And then this time, yellow golden light comes from his heart to your crown. And by receiving this light, yellow in color, then you think that you get the insights of all the realizations of the path to enlightenment, and in particular the meditation we're going to put into practice, right? Seeing the source of the problem as being ignorance, you know, seeing that based on that afflictions arise, based on that we act, you know, and seeing everything concrete, well, it actually doesn't exist in that way, you know, so try to analyze the things we discussed. Yeah. So this time, this yellow and golden light comes to the crown of your head and fills your whole body. So also that visualization we do for about a minute or two. Right now, think that your whole body is filled with this nectar light, yellow, golden in color, and you're suitable now to meditate or analyze. So we do analytical meditation, and take an example out of your daily life. You got irritated with a person or situation, and see how this very concrete concept of an eye that appears first, then there's this irritation. You see the person or the situation also existing from their own sight, you know. And then this irritation comes, or aversion comes, and takes over. You say something wrong, or mentally you're totally disturbed, you disturb the other person, a cause for problems, a cause for suffering. You know, first try to analyze that step. So let's do that for about 2 minutes. Then you try to have a conclusion here first, yeah, seeing that it's true based on seeing everything concrete, seeing the eye concrete, affliction arises, you know, seeing the people or the situation concrete, it becomes stronger and stronger, and there's a problem, yeah, a physical, verbal, or mental act. Yeah, to see it's all caused by this concrete concept of I and mine, yeah, or concrete aspect of reality, thinking it exists in that way. So try to come to that conclusion. And then focus on that conclusion for about a minute. And then try to analyze and see that yourself, the person or the situation, the thoughts, is all in the nature of interdependence. Nothing exists from its own side, right? Try to see that, to analyze that for about a minute or two. So here also come to a conclusion and see that it's true, everything is in the nature of interdependence, right? And because of that, you know, it's incorrect to see things as concrete, yeah, that doesn't exist. You know, so try to come to to this conclusion and then focus on that conclusion for about a minute. Then to conclude, then something I add today to the meditation is that Sakyamuni Buddha, whose face lies in front, now comes to the crown of your head and becomes smaller, smaller, and then on the crown of your head faces the same direction as you are facing, and becomes even smaller, like the size of your thumb, for example, and then descends to the crown, all the way to your heart, and then becomes one with your own mind at the level of your heart. Can feel a little bit of bliss or happiness there. Yeah. All right. So, yeah. So this last part, I mean, the whole meditation, basically of Kasa. The whole meditation, basically on the. We already did with the visualization, right? For those who study a bit more, it comes from mainly from two Lamrim texts. It's called the Swift Path and the Easy Path. You know? So, or a Path of Bliss, sometimes translated, or Easy Path. Yeah, so it's two texts by the Panchen Lamas who wrote very practical commentaries on the Lamrim. Yeah, so that's for those who are interested. Yeah, because not all the Lamrims, they explain the structure with the nectar light in this way. Yeah, so just for those who are interested. It's always important to know the source, you know. That's especially in our tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on, you know, the origin, the purity of the tradition. Yeah, so that's always good to know. Yeah. So then questions? Yeah, I'm always running out of time.
Thank you so much, Geshe Namdak, for the clarity and your wisdom. The first question, can a baby be born without consciousness? I mean, I think you've covered a few of these aspects, yeah. So I don't know if you want to add anything. Yeah.
So a baby without consciousness, it depends how you define a baby. Generally speaking, a baby who comes out, you know, acts right, so that's not possible without consciousness. Because you need consciousness, as we saw, you know, for the senses to act, you need consciousness, right? You have those three conditions: object, sense power, and consciousness, right? So without consciousness, if it's just the eye, it cannot function. So that means, a baby born without consciousness doesn't exist. Even in science, for example, if there's, you know, if the egg cell of the mother, if there's conception or not, if it gets fertilized or not, sometimes there's no fault from the father and mother side. The sperm is okay, the ovum is okay, there's no issue. But still, there's no baby to be born, right? So that's also something what we call cause and effect relationships. And if there's no consciousness that has a karma at that particular time, at that particular place, there's many causes and conditions present, then it doesn't happen, right? So consciousness comes at that moment, yeah? So not at birth, yeah.
Thank you. And then are there other non-human forms of life in the universe which would be considered a precious rebirth, for instance, in other planets?
Space. It was just recently they released photographs of unidentified flying objects, no? The Pentagon. I mean, of course, there's life in other universes. Right? As a Buddhist, we completely accept that because the universe is endless and sentient beings are endless, so there's no reason why not. There's other planets with similar forms of life. Yeah. But if it says non-human and a precious human rebirth, you know, if you've studied the freedoms and endowments, then one of the first endowments, you say being a human being, right? So that means that, of course, if there's another planet with similar forms of life, maybe not exactly the same as us, right? But the Buddha taught, the teachings were there, all the other factors are present, and maybe they have a slightly different definition of the 18 aspects of freedom and endowments, then there's possibility is there. Right? Yeah. And there's many other places like the Pure Lands, were in incredible conditions to practice the Dharma. I was never really into Pure Land kind of things, but the Lama Dzogchen Rinpoche asked me to translate a few texts for the Pure Land of Amitabha, Dewachen. And it's very moving. Also, Lama Tsongkhapa wrote a commentary, how it is there. It's very pleasant. Yeah, so those things are also there.
Oops. Thank you. When I do the concentration meditation, counting breath, it often happens to me that my main mind engages in some form of thinking commentary whilst also counting correctly, divided attention. How could I try to correct this?
Yeah. You're not the only one that wrote that question, because I also have the problem. Of course, there's just, if you start to using these two mental factors, alertness and mindfulness, you train your mind, right? In beginning, it can happen that for 2 minutes, you're just completely somewhere else on the planet. And then you say, oh, what I'm doing again? Oh yeah, I was counting the breath. And then you lose completely, right? So then later on, when you train more, then it can happen that you think, oh, there's so many more thoughts than before. That's a good sign, because it proves that you see that you're getting more aware of what's going on inside the mind. Yeah. So the criminal who has emotional hijack, he doesn't have this awareness of what's going on inside the mind. You know, that's why he's not in control. So the more you do this concentration meditation and being, you know, putting effort in these two mental factors of alertness and mindfulness, you will train your mind, and then down the line, even this single point distraction you can cut. Yeah, so that's people who get this kind of calm abiding, you know, they can sit for hours without a second distraction, because their mind is so trained over a long period of time. I mean, long period of time, you know, technically speaking, in text it says 6 or 9 months, right? So you can get, you know, if you have all the right conditions. You know? But some people get it quicker, possible. You know? Yeah.
Thank you, Keshla. Is it possible to have a karmic connection with someone such that you cannot in your heart of hearts let go of them, despite the fact that this is causing you lots of mental suffering? Is this a form of attachment, even though you see the person's flaws as well as their strengths? Or is it love, a curse, masochism, utter stupidity?
Or, I should be, not another one, or mixed of these things.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, mostly it's like that, right? Our mind, like real genuine form of compassion or love and kindness, right, is based on equanimity. That means you think, may all sentient beings without exception be free of suffering. May all sentient beings without exception always abide in happiness. That's equanimity. Yeah, so we think, okay, may all sentient beings be free of suffering, except this one, you know? So then we don't have a general form of equanimity, right? So if you don't have that general form of equanimity, then forget love and kindness and compassion, right? So most of us is mixed. I also have the same problems. Yeah? Some people you care for, right? But still, you can see there is involvement of afflictions. So it's mostly a mixture of things, right? So if you have really genuine form of love and kindness or compassion, then it should be without these extremes, or those who are close or those who are distant. Yeah.
I'm sort of reading the question as Geshe-la, just so it's on the recording.
Sure.
We say that ignorance, the perception of an intrinsic self, is a poison afflicting our consciousness since beginningless lifetimes. But where does this mistaken view of reality come from? Could it be the result of habituation, meaning there was a time, place where an intrinsic self did indeed exist? This, however, would contradict the statement that ignorance has been present since beginningless time.
So the answer is already in the question. You see, I like the poison aspect. Yeah, the poisonous mind. Yeah, we talk about three types of poison. Yeah. So, it's what I said before. It's there since beginning's lifetime. Yeah, I read to this aspect of this baby who knows how to breathe, who knows how to drink. That was not taught in this lifetime, right? So that's another kind of habituation pattern. It comes from the genes, but where does that come from? And then I went to the Big Ben. It's maybe better to call it Big Bounce, because of the Big Ben is caused by a previous moment, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that means our consciousness, same thing. The problem is with ignorance is we never have never seen emptiness, right? So that's why it's an issue. Yeah, since there's something in lifetime. So now, tomorrow, there's opportunity to stop it.
Thank you. Please could you clarify what is intended by self-sufficient in the emptiness handout circulated yesterday?
Tomorrow.
Thank you.
You always, it comes too complicated. Yeah. It's already 5:05. So, tomorrow I was planning to do that anyway. Yeah.
Good. Should I leave the questions?
Yeah, leave it and then we see if it's answered or not.
The rest of the questions, shall I leave those now?
Empty. Yeah, that's also referring to. Yeah, also, the three turnings of the wheel I will do tomorrow. Oh, yes. There's another one. The middle way and Chittamatra. It's also we'll do tomorrow. Twofold question. You see that?
Yep. When we visualize the white light coming from the Buddha's heart into the crown of our head and purifying all karma accumulated in this and past lives, does this actually happen? And the second part, when doing purification, is as in what was mentioned in A, ignorance is in the mix. What is a way of purifying? What does away with ignorance also?
Yeah, we mostly covered it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Ignorance
yes.
in the mix.
Yeah.
Nice term. So yeah. We thought of it like with the white light, you know, what we just did. If you have those four opponent powers, right, if you have them all correct, then the potential for the result to come about can be taken away, right?
Yeah.
But the seed not, because the seed has to be destroyed with direct perception of emptiness. So that's the first part of the question. Ignorance is always in the mix. Of course, also when we do purification practice, we think, oh, I am sitting here. And I am doing this, right? So we see things existing from its own side. So what I said before, with doing virtuous activities to make it complete, you always should think the person who does the act, the actual act, and the object, right? The three circles, so to say, that are in the nature of interdependence. So you doing purification. So we have the four opponent powers, we have the practice, but then also you doing the purification, the actual purification, right? That happens, or everything is also an activity. Yeah, they're all in the nature of interdependence. Yeah? So then you make it stronger. Yeah.
Okay.
And then ignorance doesn't get into the mix. It gets out of the mix.
Okay. Lara's just come back on the baby, but for the baby, it is functional to know how to breathe, etc., etc. Yeah. But what's the function of ignorance?
A very good one. The function of ignorance is that it should be taken away. I mean, all afflictions, right? We all describe the drawbacks of the afflictions, but they have one quality, you know, one incredible quality, and that is that they can be taken away.
Okay. Thank you. Just a couple of, hopefully, you've mentioned again about the His Holiness thinking we should meditate on emptiness. Would you suggest a simple method we can also try to meditate 16 times a day?
Oh, there's an update question. I thought, how do people know that before I start to this came up, right? So that means that for tomorrow we're going to talk about a little bit more emptiness, and then, you know, if you wake up in the morning, wash your face and then try to reflect these points, right? And then when you do a morning meditation, try to think about. And that's why if you have a strong analytical meditation you do in the morning, then throughout the day, if you also train with this concentration meditation, you train in these two mental factors, alertness and mindfulness. So then throughout the day, as long as you keep that understanding of emptiness the best way you can, or interdependence, right? As soon as you try to see things concrete again, then alertness rings the bell. Say, oh, what was your intention this morning? And with mindfulness, we remember that, and then we keep ourselves mindful throughout the day. You don't have to, you know, put your watch on every few hours and say, oh, it's time now. Stop everything. Now if you think correctness, that might be quite complex, you know. But yeah, it's good to reflect about it again and again whenever there's an opportunity. And sometimes also, if you do breathing, you know, just kind of relax, breathing. Then if you get do that throughout the day, you know, a few times throughout the day, then it keeps the mind calm. If the mind is calm, it's much easier to be in control. If the mind is stressed and tired, we get negative, right? So that means similar techniques can be used, like this emptiness is kind of, throughout the day try to recall it, and then it prevents a lot of problems.
Do you want to leave the last two questions?
I can just do, purification, you can read.
To purify at the end of the day, do we need to do preparatory prayers or just do the mantras with the four powers in mind?
And that's the main thing is what I said, prayers help us to reflect, right? Prayers are not just kind of a way to, you know, just to say something. You know, when His Holiness, once he said, using Lindemji, you know, one of His Holiness' own teachers, when he was doing his commitments, when his mind got distracted, he will start over again. So for us, we will never end properly, but yeah. So the main thing is not only reading. There's another thing from this Lindemji. The main thing is to contemplate those points. Right? So that means if you have a prayer or not, if you have those four powers complete and you do the purifying factor without a text, this is so perfect. If you have a text but you just recite it without having the four opponent powers and without thinking about it, then there's no point, right? But if you have the combination of the two, you have a good text, because texts, they carry a particular blessing, you know? That's why many precious texts, sometimes we really don't know, sometimes what incredible potentials these texts have, you know? Because Lama Tsongkhapa, by reading the text, not by Manjushri giving him blessing, by reading the text, he realized emptiness, right? And so with prayer, same thing. Some prayers are moving. In the monastery, we did sometimes a week of prayers, very beautiful moving tunes, you know, it comes from secret visions of certain hybridized beings. So moving. And it does something with the mind, you know. So the mind becomes like into the Dharma. It's very interesting. Yeah, so that's why prayers can be very helpful. If you have the combination of prayers and understanding and the four opponent powers, then it becomes an incredible tool. Yeah.
Thank you. Could you repeat how the seed is still there, but potential can be gone?
Yeah. So in Tibetan, we say the potential for the result, it's like a sprout. Yeah, comes out of the seeds, right? But the sprout comes only out of the seeds when all the right conditions are present. You see? But the potential is still in the seed before the conditions are present, right? So as soon as I put a seed here on the table, that seed has the potential to sprout, but it won't sprout because it doesn't have the right conditions. If I put it in the soil with heat, moisture, fertilization, it will go. You see? Mm-hmm. So that potential, that is being taken away. Mm-hmm. But the seed remains. Yeah.
Susan's asked, what's the benefit of pranayama breathing through the left nostril only?
Yeah, sorry. I just came something to my mind. Mm-hmm. The previous question is also for the potential for the reason to come about. So what is left? What is that seed? Yeah, so that seed cannot produce a result of suffering, for example, of negative karma, right? Mm. But it's very debatable. There's a lot of different interpretations, right? But certain scholars, they say, but the seed can produce a similar kind of starting of karma, like seed of anger that you get irritated again, and then you act in the act of murder or something, right? So that means that seed is still there. Mm. But the potential that produces suffering has been taken away. But that seed can still produce other forms of consciousness, right? Yeah, that's certain interpretations. Just to complete it. Yeah, sorry.
Thank you. Susan's asking, what is the benefit of pranayama breathing through the left nostril only?
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really study those yoga aspects, but there's also in our tradition, there's a lot of, depends what kind of practicing are you doing, and probably what you like to enhance in the channels, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why certain things are to balance, certain things are to force, you know. So you have to study within the tradition. I didn't study that tradition, so I cannot really say for this or that purpose.
Thank you.
In general speaking, the breathing has a kind of relationship with the subtle body, right? Yeah. So to enhance certain aspects in the subtle body, even, you know, the sun and moon change as it changes on our breathing pattern. His Holiness often mentions, you know, that in the Kalachakra Tantra, it very clearly explains, you know, what kind of changes are there and why are they there and how to, you know, do this kind of practice. So in every tradition, you have a kind of interpretation based upon what you like to acquire or what aim you like to accomplish, right? So in the pranayama, in this kind of Hindu or you know other aspects of yoga, I cannot really say because so many traditions are there as well. You know, so there to be no clear about this aspect. But yeah, it can be to enhance a particular channel or chakra or something like that probably.
Thank you. Susan's also asking, but there might not be time to answer this. Please could you mention the purification practices in Vajrayana?
Another course?
Yes,
In Vajrayana, we have, for example, Vajrasattva, right? It's Vajrayana practice. Yeah. Then we have Dojikatro, it's kind of a fire puja, with black seeds, purification practice. Then we have Damsik Dorje, this kind of Samaya Vajra. It's also to purify on Samaya. Yeah, there's quite a few like that. And even the mandala offering, you can do it going to the sutra system, and you can do it going to tantra system. And so, that's a whole new subject. I said maybe another time, because we do a lot of preliminary practices in the discovering Buddhism and basic program is good to do. So maybe one time we find some time to go over. There's different divisions. Some say the four main preliminary practices, then the collection of 10 or 9. Yeah. There's many categories. Of Inkaluko, Nyingma, Sanjaya, Kalyu. Yeah, so maybe one day we can do it. Yeah, or one day.
Thank you so much, Geshe-la. That's the end of most of the questions. And I just want to announce to everybody that Geshe-la is very kindly starting on Sunday, May 24th, to read a few pages from each volume of the Kengyu that's behind him on the throne. And people can join in with that. So if you're on the Jamyang London news, you will have received that. So I just want to thank you so much for doing that, Geshe-la, because as far as I know, it's the first time. I don't know if it's been done before. Yeah. Perhaps it has, and I don't remember. But the fact it's you're doing it in London, how wonderful the fact we can join in. So thank you for that, and thank you for today. And just to remind people that from tomorrow, it's in the morning at 10 o'clock, and also in the afternoon.
Sorry we're late, but just a few quick dedications to make it complete. Yeah, so try also to dedicate and think that you making the dedication and a dedication and the thing you're dedicating towards too, also are those three circles are in the nature of interdependence, right? Interdependent existence. Yeah, so try to pray for the spreading of the Buddha Dharma in all directions, these teachings, so sentient beings come in contact and quickly progress on stages of liberation and enlightenment. Yeah. Tage jine sampa ke wa di tendan do wa kundan ke ba jesan lo zan ra ba yi ten be ni mo rin do sa ge shin. Also for His Holiness Dalai Lama, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and all other teachers teaching the true path to enlightenment and may their long and healthy lives and all their holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. Kare ra ve kor ve singam so tendan de wa mo de jung chen re zi guan ten zen ka chen sa ve zi de wa do ten ki wo chi. And then for the three principal aspects of the mind to come in the continuum of all sentient beings without exception, and may they never degenerate but increase more and more. Nejon sambar den boje magye panan ki gyuchi geba nyamba me ba yang gon ne kon da ba ba jo chanjo sem jo rin boje magye panan ki gyuchi geba nyamba me ba gon ne kon da ba ba to ni ta wa rin boje magye panan ki gyuchi geba nyamba gon ne kon da ba ba jo. Oneself, all sentient beings of future lifetimes, and every part from precious Guru, and by this connection, quickly progress on the grounds and paths to enlightenment, state of Vajradhara. Geva gunde yanda lama da dhamma chedanda. Saranam ye yunde rabzane doje changi kovanyo to. Okay, thank you very much. See you tomorrow morning. Make sure you have a good cup of coffee before we start with emptiness. Thank you. Merci beaucoup. Thank you.